Stein Online's live Clubland Q&A is just 1 minute away.
This is Mark Stein, back after four sellout voyages for the fifth annual Mark Stein Cruise. If you like the sound of April in Portugal and Spain on the fabulous new ship, the Celebrity Apex, well, you'll be at the apex of celebrity for our traditional week of sun, sea and civilizational collapse. I'll have special guests from both sides of the Atlantic, including a reunion of all your favourite telly presenters from the glory days of GB News, who've since been sacked. And we'll do all the things you like about the Mark Stein Show and Stein Online, but close up and on water. More details at steinonline.com or marksteincruise.com.
The Stein Online Clubland Q&A begins right now. Here's Mark.
Hey, welcome along. November the 6th, 2024. It is 12 noon in Las Vegas, where they have yet to call Nevada. It is 1 p.m. in Phoenix, where they have yet to call Arizona. It is 2 p.m. in the Upper Peninsula, where they have very belatedly called Michigan for Trump. It is 3 p.m. in Montpelier, Vermont, where the Democrats have lost their supermajority. 4 p.m. in the beautiful Maritime Provinces of Kamala's Canada. 4:30 p.m. in fabulous Newfoundland and beyond the Americas. 8 p.m. in London, where Sir Keir Starmer has said he's looking forward to working with Trump. I don't believe that for a moment. 9 p.m. in Paris, where Monsieur Macron has said likewise. 10 p.m. in Jerusalem, where Mr. Netanyahu has congratulated Trump. 11 p.m. in Moscow, where I think the Kremlin has announced that Putin and Trump will not be speaking. 11:30 in Tehran, the Mullahs have no plans to call. 1:45 in Kathmandu, 4 a.m. in Singapore and Hong Kong, 7 a.m. in Sydney and Melbourne, 9 a.m. in Auckland, and an even more convivial hour for the Kippers and Kedgeree in His Majesty's dominions eastward across the Pacific. Exactly 30 years ago, the 1994 midterms in America, and Newt Gingrich's Republicans scored an historic victory, winning the House of Representatives for the first time in 40 years. And on the Wednesday after the Tuesday night before, our late friend Rush Limbaugh opened his show with this number one record. Just for you, Rush.
I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I wouldn't. So good. So good. I got a year. I wouldn't. I feel good. I knew that I would. So good, so good. But I got you. So good, so good. But I got you. So good, so good. But I got you. Hey!
Yeah, I feel good. So good. Because I got Trump. James Brown in memory of the one and only Rush Limbaugh. People don't realize just how different all that kind of thing was 30 years ago. Rush after the 1994 midterms. Kamala Harris, remember her? Kamala Harris has finally, an hour or so back, called the president-elect to concede. She's as graceless in defeat as she is in everything else. But don't cry for her, California, because she'll be wafted onward without trace. They'll make her California's chief justice or something. But who cares about her? Terrible candidate, just an awful candidate. Nobody likes her. She just reeks of that thing she did on the night before the election. Everyone's been waiting there for hours to see their candidate. She talks for 9 minutes and then leaves. You know, there's nothing. She's one of the most unlikable people, even by the standards of politics. And I know a little about this because I'm an unlikable foreigner, just like her. So Trump now has his second term. He can't afford to waste 20 minutes of it. I've been perfectly consistent on this. Last time round, I said he shouldn't bother with an inaugural because he can't get anyone. You know, who's going to be there? Taylor Swift, Beyonce, George Clooney? No, they're all weeping for their awful Kamala candidate. And even the ones, you know, the foreigners who presumably are at one remove from the last time round, what was he? What's he called? The blind opera singer Andrea Bocelli. Would have been nice to hear him at the inaugural, but they took the tire iron to him in the back alley and let it be known that he wouldn't have any career left in America if he played the Trump inaugural. So he won't be there. There's not going to be. And so what do you got then? You got the 57,000 fire trucks parading through the street. It's not worth it. Don't you know now? And as I said, I told him all this 4 years ago. I said, no inaugural, you should just be sworn in at the border. Do the Calvin Coolidge thing. He was sworn in by his dad in their homestead in Vermont. And he should be sworn in because his dad was a justice of the peace. And Trump should have been sworn in as by a justice of the peace on the Mexican war border and laid the first brick in the wall. And this time round, he should. Well, if you want a fire truck, you should have Cory Comparatore's fire truck. The guy who's dead because the Secret Service let him be shot. So he should have Cory Comparatore's fire truck, whatever municipality that is, should agree to release that truck for the day. And he should stay at a Motel 6 or whatever they got in the neighborhood and ride in that fire truck to the border, be sworn in by a justice of the peace, and then deport the first guy to attempt to enter the United States on his watch, deport him back across the Rio Grande. There's no point. For a start, the ritual, the rituals are not really done well. It's not like the Calvin Coolidge inaugural is far more moving when you read about it than any of these ones here in Washington. So, and the thing about it is he's never going to be in the club. He's never going to be in the Pantheon. He knows from the last 4 years. Do you think he's had a lot of invitations to state banquets or anything? No. They want him in jail. There's no point trying to pretend you're like another president. You tried that and it didn't work last time. So this time round, just do it your way. Ignore all these rituals. They're rubbish anyway. That parade of 57,000 fire trucks was boring as hell. Just have the one fire truck that reminds people of what this evil deep state tried to do to you. So that's my thoughts. You know, this is much better. He's fought a brilliant campaign and he has a much better team around him this time. So he's not just, having to pick from... Who was the guy who was his first chief? Reince Priebus or whatever the guy's name was. He's got a much better... He's got, like, Elon Musk. He's got RFK Jr. He's got, as I said the other day, these are original thinkers, which is what it's going to take to save America. Let's get to your questions. You don't want to hear from me. Dan Phillips writes from Northeast Tennessee. I'm a foreigner. These subtle calibrations between Northeast Tennessee and North Northwest Tennessee, they're lost on me, Dan. Dan says, gloat. Yeah, this is our Gloat Fest edition. Of course, let's wallow in it for a while. It's the least we can do for ourselves after 4 years of hell. What a surreal journey leading to an incredible victory. So we have a 4 year to... Yeah, it's worth enjoying the day. I enjoyed Trump's victory, what is it now, 8 years ago? And my youngest kid sent me an email shortly after Trump was declared the victor. I think he was in Montreal, I think. But anyway, he'd had his photograph taken with Trump just a few weeks earlier. And he signed the email. I think this may even have been his sort of permanent pre-programmed signature for a while. He had his name. And then underneath the name, it said Friend of the President. And I got a kick out of that. It was a fabulous day, that. And likewise, Brexit. I've talked about this before. I went to bed on the Brexit vote, and then the polls closed, and at 10 o'clock the BBC coverage started, and Nigel Farage came on at 10:02 and said, well, unfortunately, I think we've come up a little bit short. And I thought, oh, God, I can't face just watching hours of BBC smugness and gloating only to lose. So I went to bed. I turned in, and I had to catch a flight to Dublin the following morning. So I woke up early, about 4:20 in the morning, or whatever it was, and switched on the television just to see David Dimbleby of the BBC, who was the BBC's senior announcer before they hired that pedo, who's been convicted of creating all the child pornography. But David Dimbleby didn't do any of that kind of stuff. He was quite a respectable fellow. And I turned on just to hear him announce that the British people had voted to repudiate both governments' foreign policy priority for the last half century. And all the BBC guys are looking ashen-faced. And then I got on the shuttle to Dublin and sat next to a delightful, charming young Irish barrister who was, you know, we sounded each other out cautiously, and she was delighted by it too. And we just quaffed champagne all the way across the Irish Sea to Dublin. So I enjoy the day, and there will be disappointments ahead, but if it is a good time to gloat, because you've stuck your fingers in the eye of the people who have done all this to us. That was the great thing about the first Trump vote and about Brexit. And it's the great thing about today. And the media have learned nothing. But the point is, Trump's been here before, and he doesn't want to make the same mistakes as he did last time, with mainly over personnel things. So that's why I say, what's the big deal? Who cares about it? Unless you're, you know, it's different with, we had little bits of the Kennedy and the Reagan inaugurals on our Saturday show this week, and they were both organized by Frank Sinatra, the only guy to organize both a Democrat and a Republican inaugural gala. And that's just because he happened to be friends with JFK and friends then 25 years later with Ronald Reagan. But there's absolutely no point in just being turned down by A-listers. You don't. I never asked Taylor Swift to play my inaugural because I don't like Taylor Swift. And it's so you're just setting yourself up for constant humiliation. Go to the border. Remember Cory Comparatore with his fire truck. And stand there on the border and repulse guys who try to break in on your watch. That'd be far more effective. Anyway, Dan says, so we have a 4-year term pending and a nominally accommodating Senate and House. Yeah, right, whatever you say. Here is the weighty issue to ponder. Is this the start of a new era that can reverse the projected death of America? Or is this but a rearguard action that will serve only to arrest the rate of decline? So Dan's asking the question, you know, do you want to go over the cliff full speed ahead, or do you want to go over the cliff in third gear? Which isn't really a choice, but historically, if you look at the history of the Western world since the end of the Great War, historically, Mrs. Thatcher used to talk about this a lot. She used to talk about the ratchet effect. You can, if you understand these things, and obviously if you're like an NPR listening woman or one of the purple-haired non-binary types who've all over Twitter wailing and screaming, you'll have no idea what a ratchet is. But it can only, you can stop it, but you can only move in one direction. And Mrs. Thatcher used to say that was the trouble with British politics after the Second World War, that it was a ratchet effect. So the Labour Party got in and they did this and they did that and they ploughed full steam ahead. And then the Conservatives got in and they stopped, but they were never able to reverse what the socialists had done. And the same thing can be seen in the same period in American government too, for the most part. You know, what did, for example, just a little itsy-bitsy thing, like the Republican platform has pledged to abolish Jimmy Carter's Department of Energy and Department of Education for 45 years now. But they that's a nothing little thing, but they haven't been able to accomplish it. So the ratchet effect is a real thing. The difference, I think, here, I said a moment ago, he had this, it was a team of original thinkers. It was interesting to me that ad. I think Nicole Shanahan was the one who's a much more interesting person that I didn't really know anything about her, but I sort of assumed just because of the way most people are that she had, you know, a whole bunch of idiotic, lazily thought out assumptions. But that ad that they put out, whatever it was, 2 days before the election, showed Trump with her, Trump with RFK Jr., Trump with Elon Musk, Trump with Tulsi Gabbard. That's a far more interesting group. And here's the important point, a less duplicitous group. Now, you think you've got a guy there, Elon Musk, you've got a guy who sends up a space rocket. Well, whoop-de-doo. So we saw that on telly in the 60s. Big deal. Then he brings it back to Earth, and in the most visually impressive innovation since those flights in the 60s, he has this thing that catches the space rocket as it's coming back down. And he's not going to be some time-serving Jobsworth. He's not like a thoroughly modern Millie. He doesn't need a... He's not a buffoon who just wants to strut around like a Latin American Gauleiter. He's got a ton of things on his plate. If he's going to be part of this administration, it's because he wants to do big things. I would say that's true. As you know, when I first heard RFK Jr. on the show, there were people, why are you having this guy on? He's a big lib. He belongs to... Well, I tell you why I had him on, which he actually spelled out explicitly, I think the second or third time he was on, which is that Americans are the most medicated people on the planet and they have the worst health outcomes on the planet. That's a fact. And they certainly have the sickest children on the planet, and he wants to make America healthy again. That would be a great accomplishment. Now, there's other things that have to be done. This insane, this sort of rocketing up every 6 weeks, adding a couple of trillion dollars in debt or whatever it is now, so that we're going to hit $50 trillion. The longer that goes without doing anything about that, the more total the collapse is going to be. And they're planning the post-dollar, the rest of the world, apart from the United States and its European vassal states, as Veronica in Auckland calls them, are planning the post-dollar world. So these are big things that you got. You're not going to get anywhere if you just fill your administration with John Bolton and Lindsey Graham and all these characters, because they had 25 years and they screwed the country. So there's no point. One of the great, I mean, this is the idea of Kamala Harris campaigning, you know, closing with Liz Cheney. Oh, Trump said he wanted to execute Liz Cheney. Oh, he didn't actually say that. But you know what? Even if he had said it, nobody would care. Because if you know, if you saw any tweets from veterans or veterans' families when the veteran has returned and his life is terrible and he's on food stamps and he's nothing to live for and his three of his four limbs are missing and he commits suicide, they hate the Cheneys. I talked about, I don't want to do it again because they're over, but I talked about Dick Cheney a couple of weeks back. And I said, my mistake was thinking he was serious and that America was serious. And these people, my friend, my old friend from National Review, Jonah Goldberg. Jonah said he wrote in Paul Ryan. Paul Ryan's a wanker. How can anyone say that? You, if you've been exposed to Paul Ryan, you know he's not serious. He was the chief obstructionist of the elected president last time round. These people had their chance and they blew it. The Cheneys had their chance to do shock and awe on every nation on earth, and it didn't go anywhere, except there were a ton of maimed dead Americans, and even beyond the Americans. I mean, I would be in favour of hanging thoroughly modern Millie just for that thing he did on the way out the door when he droned that family of photogenic Kabul moppets as he was skedaddling out of town. These are awful people. There's no base for them. As I always say, there's a base for Kamala. There's a base for Trump. There is no base, no base for the Cheneys. Yeah, you know, nothing is inevitable. As Charles Krauthammer used to say, decline is a choice. But the guys, the old Republican Party, the guys who, 437 ex-heads of the intelligence community under Bush and Cheney have announced that they're endorsing Kamala. Nobody cares about them. They have no base. Peter, pardon me, I got a bit of a breathing difficulty at the moment. Peter says, greetings, Mark. Should the incoming administration do the squish thing and let bygones be bygones with the left, a la Mitt Romney? Or do you think it's time for a massive RICO roundup of the traitors who've been busy lying, cheating and stealing as they have dismantled the American Republic, a la Sulla, says Peter. Look, here's the thing. The American Republic, so-called, worked for its first couple of centuries because they didn't try to put the opposition leader in jail. That's basically it. The purpose of, we've talked about this before, the purpose of democracy is to bind the loser to the result. Well, you're not going to do that if they know that if they lose, they're going to be sued into oblivion. All their aides, even quite minor ones, are going to be broke. They're going to lose their life savings on legal bills. They're going to lose everything, like Rudy Giuliani. And you yourself are going to be tried and convicted. And then the judge, instead of saying, take him down, as they do in English courts across the Commonwealth at the end, and to begin his jail term, here the process is the punishment. So you have repeated postponements of announcing the sentencing, like this wanker judge in New York is doing. So I don't think, you know, I certainly don't think that Trump should, there's anything to be gained by trying to put Biden in prison. I mean, any sentence he gets for his crimes, he's basically been on the take from the Chi-Coms for decades. And that's a problem. And certainly I think people should be prosecuted for that as it goes on. But whatever if you gave Biden a sentence he deserves, you know, he's going to be dead in the very early stages of that. And so I don't think that is a useful use. But I will tell you this, that the law enforcement at the federal level has to be cleaned out totally so that this doesn't happen again. So we have to break up the Department of Justice. All these things, people talk about the FBI and the Bureau of Prisons as if they're distinct entities. They're not. They all come under Merrick Garland. So, you know, whether you're talking about the Epstein quote-unquote suicide, or you're talking about that plot to kidnap Gretchen Whitmer, in the end, they're all traced to the desk of the Attorney General and whatever they call it, one of those stupid bits of insider lingo. What do they call it? Main Justice. They call it Main Justice because it's the Department of Justice that supervises all these other bodies. And that should be broken up and replaced with something that has far more circumscribed powers. So I'm in favor of institutional reforms like that. And I'm in favor of, you know, I'm not in favor of another Durham report, because Durham, who was that guy, you know, all his law license was suspended for 18 months or something. That was Durham's big victory. And then some court in D.C. gave it him back after 7 weeks or whatever it was. I'm not interested in any of that. I'm interested in ensuring this stuff stops happening. I'm interested in ensuring that America ceases to be an embarrassment. I'm interested in electoral reform so that America can conduct elections that are as pristine as Botswana's. And don't worry, I'm not setting impossible targets like trying to get elections as clean as Denmark's. I'm just saying, you know, can you try and run as clean elections as a semi-functioning African country so we don't have all this crap every 2 years. Keith Farrell says, as Nazi fascist garbage. Yeah, I would like the Republicans. You should own this stuff. The Republicans, you know, when everybody's, what was my line? When everybody's Hitler, nobody's Hitler. And I'm tired of this. Someone's put together a montage of the lefty freak out after last night. These people, you know, they're all sort of very gender non-binary. I couldn't honestly tell you what they're meant to be. And I'm sure they've got an interesting range of pronouns. But they're all weeping and wailing about living in a fascist country. I'm tired of the parochialism of the know-nothing left, you know, because I'm old enough to have known a lot of people, actually, over the years who lived under fascism. I knew a guy, he was a boy in Budapest during the war. And when the Nazi regime was mainly run by Hungarians at that point, but they were running out because it was getting towards the end of the war and they were running out of bullets. So the guys in Berlin came up with this great theory. If you just tied all the guys together with a rope and stood them in the river, in the Danube, and you shot the guy at the left end and you shot the guy at the right end, then everyone in between would drown. And you'd only have used two bullets because they were shorter bullets. And so I used to hear all these stories as I was growing up. And my own mother's childhood was spent under Nazi occupation. She didn't talk about it a lot, but when she did, it was, you know, not pleasant stuff. And I remember when my great uncle Marcel was dying and he was lying on his deathbed in St. Nicholas in Belgium. And we all were there seeing him, and he'd had these moments of lucidity in which he named all the Nazi collaborators who were still walking around the town. So now we have the most narcissistic, cosseted bunch of little dweeby non-binary creeps. Oh, I'm living in a fascist country. Man up, you great stinking twat. It's so insulting. It's insulting to tens of millions of people around the world who know what it's like to live under a fam. I can't stand these people. I would like to do to them what the state of New York did to Peanut the Squirrel. It's so self-indulgent. It's so pathetic. Oh, I know nothing about history, but someone told me this word fascist, so now I'm a victim of fascism. You couldn't stick what people like, my mother isn't, you know, anything particularly special, but you couldn't stick what she had to go through when she was a 9-year-old girl. Keith continues, as Nazi fascist garbage. Sorry, I'm getting a little excited. I shouldn't have done that, really. As Nazi fascist garbage, I'm delighted to see Trump re-elected, along with the various records being broken. How long do I have to listen to the Democrats' broken record of uneducated white people being to blame for my jubilation? Yeah, well, they've done a bit of that, but what was more interesting was all these people saying, oh, we need to have an honest conversation about Hispanic voters. When these various identity groups refuse to behave as the Democrats' house pets, the Democrats, as the most longest surviving racist institution on the planet, 2 centuries now, you know, and all the other racist institutions on the political front, like the National Party in South Africa, no longer exist, but the Democrats do. And it's funny how when things do not go well for them, they just revert to their traditional racism. So now they're all complaining that black men are and Latino men are sexist, and that's why they wouldn't vote for Kamala. And it's beautiful, to watch, and we shouldn't get in the way of that, really, because their whole purpose was to construct a coalition of all the fringes and thereby make it big and mainstream. And they managed... They're down. It doesn't matter who you pick. They're down with blacks. They're down with Hispanics. They're down with Muslims. They're down with the young. They blew it. They blew it. They completely. And what was interesting to me, I think I mentioned this somewhere last night as things were going on, is the thing they have going for them. It's very different for the way it is on the right, where, you know, people like David French and Jonah Goldberg piously announced that they can't possibly support the Republican candidate. So, you know, they're going to be writing in little Lord Fauntleroy or whatever. That it's not like that on the left. The left, you know, they still all go and pay court to Al Sharpton and all the rest of it. They stick, or what's he called? Farrakhan. Obama had to go and pay court to Farrakhan. So they're always very unified. And what happened this time is that strong-arming Biden into quitting the race and then replacing him with the Montreal schoolgirl just totally flopped for them and created huge divisions in their rainbow coalition that it will be interesting to see whether the Democrats are able to tie them all together again. The notorious Mr. J asks exactly what the hell happened last night. I'm sure gobsmacked. So many of the talking heads and pundits declared Trump to be in electoral trouble, and yet he pulled it off. You can't help but hearken back to a certain photo of Harry Truman grinning away and the headline, Dewey defeats Truman. The only issue now is the full composition of the Congress. The House is still up for grabs. I'm not so sure about that. I think it's they'll have a small, the GOP will have the small, a small majority. But I don't think the Democrats are actually capable of taking control at this stage. But troubles innumerable may be in view, says Mr. J. What about all of Trump's legal problems? He could be convicted of crimes that are jailable. What's he supposed to do? Play the mafia don running the rackets from behind bars? American politics may be evolving into a Mel Brooks movie. Oh, we're way beyond Mel Brooks these days, Mr. J. That's true. That could happen. The New York, you don't know how these guys, I mean, a lot of these people are mentally ill. I mean, as I said, if you're comparing a New York real estate developer with Adolf Hitler, you've basically, what did he do that was Hitler-like? You basically, what was the thing they said? This was their early November surprise from what was it, 2 or 3 days ago, where they said, we're getting reports, polls are beginning to indicate that the Madison Square Garden rally was the final straw, and that many people are coming back to Kamala. Independents are breaking late for Kamala because they were so horrified by the Madison Square Garden rally. it's not even a good faith error like the Dewey defeats Truman thing was. It was designed to try and concoct a Kamala groundswell where none existed. I see today that Merrick Garland and what was he called? Jack Smith, whatever the guy's name is. Jack Smith is out. He's apparently retiring from the Department of Justice. He's retiring as special counsel, and so his cases will lapse for want of anyone to prosecute them. So the federal cases have already gone away. So now we have a few rinky-dink state cases. Trump should, if this guy in judge in New York, if sentences him to 7 years in Rikers or whatever, Trump should laugh in his face and walk out of the courtroom. How many divisions has a Supreme Court judge in New York? At a certain point, the bollocks has to stop. Not all the bollocks, because it's bollocks all the way down. But the more obvious bollocks has to stop. So I'm not concerned about that. And if you've ever been to Al Capone's cell in that old prison in Philadelphia, it's one of the ones on the, what's it called, the Panopticon thing, based on Jeremy Bentham's thing, where you're never out of sight of the guards. I went to visit it with the kids when we were in Philadelphia one time, and the guards treated him like royalty. So he had all these crappy cells, and then you came to Al Capone's cell, which was like a suite at the Plaza. And that's what they'd be doing if they made them. Trump could actually run the government from jail if they want to push it that far. But the lesson of last night is this crap isn't working for them. Hitler, 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 Russia, 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 garbage, garbage, garbage. You can keep doing it, and they've already gone back to doing it. They have absolutely, you know what, For a start, they're rubbish, these people. They're the world's most incompetent ruling class. All they have is this sense of it. No one in a nation of 350 million people, someone like Kamala Harris, should never have gotten anywhere near the presidency or the vice presidency. She's a nitwit. And the fact that she was able to, what do these people have? It's like Mrs. Jake Sullivan. We posted that clip of Mrs. Jake Sullivan pretending to be an ordinary resident of my congressional district, the New Hampshire 2nd District, when in fact she lives in the, she's got a bazillion dollar home in the 1st District and she just rented some crappy apartment to pass herself off as a resident of the 2nd District. But she, both Kamala and Mrs. Jake Sullivan are absolutely everything I loathe about what's happened to America in the 21st century. Social mobility has declined to the point where in many parts of America, it's no longer detectable. And actually, social mobility is what the American dream is. Because as I said in one of my books, you know, if you were a Polish peasant in the 12th century, chances are your great, 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 whatever would be a Polish peasant in the 17th century. So after 20, 30, 50 generations, you get a bit sick of it and get on the boat to Ellis Island. And okay, you live in a tenement on the Lower East Side, but you have a kid and your kid moves uptown, and then his kid goes to university, and then the university guy's kid becomes a big shot doctor or a lawyer or whatever, and then his kid becomes some transgender activist at Harvard or whatever, and the whole cycle is to begin again. But that's what it is. The American dream is social mobility, and social mobility is on the endangered list in the America of the 21st century. And that's why we have the quality of leadership we have, because these people all marry each other. So it's like dynastic marriages in medieval Europe. The old thing, you know, if you watch Perry Mason and his secretary, Della Street, is in love with him for decades. You don't have that anymore. Or the dentist who marries his receptionist and all the people, even rich guys used to lead lives that connected them with ordinary people. Because the factory owner generally lived in the neighborhood. And now it's not like that. These people like Mrs. Jake Sullivan and Kamala are like a race apart, which increasingly they're becoming. You know, that's my... I can't stand them. I really can't. Because, you know, how can you think of them as elite when America has over $35 trillion in federal debt, which nobody in the history of mankind has ever ramped up before. So that we're spending more on, as I wrote in After America 13 years ago, and as has now come to pass, we're spending more on debt service than we are on the United States military, which has the most bloated budget of any military on the planet. These guys are rubbish. I can't stand them. I can't stand anything about them. I don't want to be governed by these people because they're useless at it. And I'll take a flyer on anybody who isn't from that circle. You know, J.D. Vance, people say, oh, he's not really... What was the thing of the... I don't even want to talk about Tim Walz. I mean, I find it fascinating that Biden, they force Biden out, and then they produce someone who's even who's got even fewer brain cells than Biden, even though she's half his age. And then she's so insecure that she goes, oh, my priority in choosing a running mate is picking someone who's even worse than me. That's a pretty difficult challenge. Does anybody have any suggestions? Oh, well, there's this bloke in Minnesota. He might fit the bill. A guy who's even less persuasive than me at trying to pass himself off as a fan of lousy American sports. Do you know why I started, played I Feel Good, James Brown for Rush? Because Rush loved that song. But one of the things Rush liked to do to me is he was never there on after big sporting occasions like the Super Bowl. He'd never be there because he'd always be at the Super Bowl, which whatever it is, basketball, is it baseball, whatever it is, he'd always be at that. And so he'd always leave me to cover on the Monday when people are calling in and wanting to ask about the guy. I never knew. So the only way you can do with it, if you can't fake that. You can't just do, you know, you can in a 6-minute cab ride, you can say, hey, how about them socks if you're in Boston? You can do it for a 6-minute cab ride. But you can't, the way that Tim Walz, he can't even get the stupid expressions from American football.
Right.
I could have told him that, you know, you can, yeah, you can learn it, they can put all the terms on a piece of paper, but you're bound to get it wrong, because that's the Germans, that was when the after Dunkirk, when they thought that the British Isles were going to be invaded any time. And the way that they trained people to test, because they say, oh, yeah, yes, I am the authentic Englishman. I have lived in this neighborhood for 8 centuries. And they said the way they always checked them to find out if they were really German spies was to ask them about sport. Because that's one of the hardest things to fake. As you just learned with Tim Walz, who actually is a spy. But he's not a German spy, but he's a Chinese spy. Okay. We're wandering a little far afield, because we're never going to hear from Tim Walz ever again. And that's absolutely great. This is Mark Steyn's Clubland Q&A, live around the planet. Oh, looky here. Here's Mark Steyn himself to tell you all about our weekend music show. This is Mark Steyn. On this weekend of remembrance, we have songs from the Great War. They're all over 100 years old, and they're all still sung. Plus, the only Sinatra record to be banned across the British Empire. Mark Steyn on the town, Saturday at 5 on Serenade Radio. Yeah, and 5 p.m. London time is 6 p.m. in Western Europe, or 12 midday North American Eastern. Mark Steyn, live around the planet. It is 14 to 4 Eastern time. That is 14 to 9 British summer. Oh, no, it's not British summer time. It's Greenwich Mean Time. 14 to 9 Greenwich Mean Time. A little behind, a lot ahead, according to where you chance to be on this turbulent earth. Robert Bridges writes, Yogi Berra is stepping up to the microphone to remind us that it is not over until it's over. Will New York State assert its state's rights to not only convict but imprison Donald J. Trump? He's already been convicted. It's now just a question of whether, you know, I'll say this. There's a limit. You can't simply say we'll use any mechanism to deny the winner of the election his victory, even for the Democrats who claim to be the great defenders of our democracy. This is a stupid strategy, particularly in this case, particularly for a crime that no ordinary person can explain. So it's not going to go well for them if they do try to do that. And I mean that. I would be in favour of burning that courthouse down if they decide to jail the president-elect. And I say that having been in that courthouse on more occasions than I might wish to. But you simply cannot, at some point, that's the logic of what they're saying. And I'm aware that it's, you know, I'm not an idiot. It's, as many of you know, it was a condition of my admission to this country that I do not foment the overthrow of the United States government. And as you also know, in recent years, I've been very twitchily getting closer and closer to the point of fomenting. And there've been times when, you know, perhaps I've been, you know, semi-fomenting. But I understand that if I foment the overthrow of the United States government, that I'll be booted out of the country. But as I read the relevant statute, there's nothing to prevent me fomenting the overthrow of state governments. And I would certainly be in favour of the government of New... just for Peanut the Squirrel and Fred the Raccoon alone, I'm in favour of the overthrow of the government of the state of New York. I would fully support that. And if I've made a mistake in the interpretation of the statute, and I'm now in breach of the conditions of my admission to the United States, well, as my late friend Kathy Schadel used to say, come and get me, you fairies. Anyway, Robert... Robert continues, the Blues are uniformly 60-40 Democrat-Republican voting so they can show a mandate. And then he quotes this thing that, you know, dozens of people have actually sent our way today. This is where someone just did a graphic showing that in 2012, Obama got 66 million votes. In 2016, Hillary got 67 million votes. In 2020, Biden got 80 million votes. And in 2024, last night, Kamala got 67 million votes. So the Democrats get 67 million votes in 2012, 2016, and 2024. But in 2020, they get over 80 million votes. And Robert says one of these things is not like the other. No, again, you know, I've been consistent on this. I'm not like those pansies with the butch boomer rock bumper music. I won't name any names. But the ones who were all talking about the election being stolen, and then the, you know, vice president of wankery at Cumulus Radio Networks, now owned by George Soros. Mark Levin's going to love the Christmas office party this year. They're now working for George Soros, but even when they weren't working for George Soros, the vice president of corporate wankery said they'd be fired if they carried on talking about the election being stolen. I went on about it on Rush and did a version of the come and get me, you fairies line of Kathy Schadel's for whatever the guy was called there. Because we were on those Cumulus stations, the Rush Limbaugh show. Yeah, and I have never, and I'll say this again, because I have been consistent. You can go and listen to the Election Day Plus 3 show on the Mark Stein audio show, where I play it's used as the bumper music. I think it's a 10cc song. There's a coup coming on. There's a coup coming on. And it's for you boomer rock types, it's a pretty good song, I would say. I've got a lot of time for 10cc. Graham Gouldman is a friend of a very good friend of mine, and I've been very clear since then that this, the 2020 election, was stolen. And as I also decided in the days afterwards, I was never going to refer to Joe Biden as President Biden. And I never have. And in fact, it got quite difficult for me because they'd keep putting it in the prompter. Well, this was when I was guest hosting for Tucker and doing that 7 o'clock show, whatever it was called, at Fox News. They'd keep putting it in the prompter. And I would say, and I would just ignore it. And coming up, we'll be talking about President Biden's new warning to, and I'd say, and coming up, we'll be talking about Mr. Biden's new warning or Joe Biden's. And they eventually asked me about this, why I kept saying Mr. Biden. I thought, oh, it's just like a reflex. Us Westminster guys, you know, we always refer to, you don't say, you know, only in... when the guy goes to visit America, does he get called Mr. Prime Minister or whatever they do? But we just say, you know, Mrs. Thatcher or Mr. Harper, Mr. Trudeau, unless it's like Bob Menzies in Australia and you say Sir Robert because he happens to have a knighthood, like Sir Keir or in London, or Dame Jacinda in New Zealand. So we don't all do all this, you know. So I'd they'd go, oh, she's just doing this foreign thing again, so they'd let it go. But I've never said President Biden, because it was perfectly obvious, you know. And if you break it down onto the micro element, so the where did these 15 million extra Obama, Hillary, Kamala all get the same 67 million, right? And we're expected to believe that Joe Biden, people so like the stumbly, mumbly, squinty routine, that an extra 15 million people come out of nowhere to vote for him, and then next time round they're gone. Where did they go? Did they all switch to Trump? No. They, for the most part, they in Pennsylvania alone, there was an increase of 1 million votes. Because in most of these so-called swing states, Trump improved his numbers, so they've actually got to come up with a pretty big number to steal the thing. So in Pennsylvania in 2020, they had 1 million extra voters. They've never had that in the entire, going back to the dawn of the Republic, they've never had that big a percentage increase in the number of extra voters. Now, well, they never existed. You know, somebody, who is it, that idiot, the guy, oh, Jake Tapper. He was on CNN last night, and their number crunching guy was saying, oh, this is look at this map. Do you know how many counties Kamala outperformed Biden? And then he clicks his zapper and the screen is wiped clean. None of them. She didn't outperform Biden in a single county. And you think, oh, my God, what a terrible candidate. Well, it's not. Yes, she was a terrible candidate. But it's beyond that. It's that those numbers were false. They were fake. It was a stolen election. Robert Bridges adds one more reminder that the Dems can suspend reality when they need to. Kamala didn't. Oh, he's making the same point. Kamala didn't underperform per se. It's just verification of the steal. All eyes on New York. Will they be a self-proclaimed nation state or part of the union? A nation cannot survive half or more than that free and half slave. Well, That's all true. I'm not sure. The only question, they tried to steal it and they were overwhelmed. And I would say that some of the thievery was dispositive. You know, I would say, for example, I think it's quite possible that Minnesota would have ended up in the Trump camp if not for the shenanigans. So he might have had a couple more states. But what was necessary to do I don't want to do this thing, that which is such a Republican thing. You know, the Republicans basically still want to investigate the 2016, Operation Crossfire Hurricane. Durham didn't quite do it for us, but maybe if we appoint another Durham and he can investigate who Sir Alexander, not he hasn't, that's his dad, Sir Alec Downer, who Mr. Downer, the Australian High Commissioner in London, his dad was High Commissioner too, Sir Alec. Alexander Downer wound up back at the Australian High Commissioner's residence he'd grown up in. I think we should get the John Durham of the late 2020s to investigate who Alexander Downer took for a drink in that London wine bar all over again. No, forget it. Forget it. You've got to be able to prioritise. That's why I say, take Cory Comparatore's fire truck to the border, be sworn in by a justice of the peace, and signal once and for all that things are different. Because the neo-monarchical things that have encrusted, Trump doesn't need that. Trump is Trump. So, all the flim-flam, the boring stuff, that attaches to the American presidency is just like rubbish to him anyway. So he shouldn't waste his time with this. He just should be showing he's on the job from day one. That's what Elon Musk wants to do. That's what RFK Jr. Wants to do. But there's, I haven't changed my... You can go back and listen to all the things I did in the days after the 2020 election. And I have never called that bugger President Biden. As I said, even when Fox News insisted on loading those words into the prompter, and I think one time I got sort of 40% in, I was going Prez, and then I caught myself and I said Mr. Biden. John Maravich says, please tell me there is hope of freedom for the hundreds of Inspector Javert's prisoners rioting in the DC, rotting in the DC gulag. An appropriate review for the misuse of the Department of Justice under Merrick Garland. I don't want to review it. These guys are wrecked and they should bring a class action lawsuit. But Trump should just pardon them all on day one. The most you ever had there. All the rest was a stretch. And this was politicized prosecution. Where people who did, where, you know, if you're Black Lives Matter or Antifa, you can burn half the town down. And that crazy gal who is Tampon Tim's beard, what's she called? Gwen Waltz. who slept with her windows open. So she could smell the smoke from the burning city as she lay there. So Trump should just pardon all those guys, because otherwise it's going to go on. Every time the Supreme Court says, no, you can't bring up, you're misapplying statute number 37,082. It doesn't apply to things like this. Then the DOJ goes, oh, okay. And they go back to the drawing board and they find some other bollocks law to wreck these guys. These guys' lives are ruined. And it didn't work for, if they want to spend the next 4 years talking about January the 6th, January the 6th didn't work for them. Russia didn't work for them. Hitler didn't work for them. Fascists didn't work for them. Look, we're best buddies with the Cheneys didn't work for them. So if they want to go down that route for the next 4 years, good luck for them. But Trump should just liquidate this issue on day one and pardon all those. All the J6ers. It's outrageous what's happened to them. He should just do some of these things on the first day to show that he can. He should order the Postmaster General to put Fred the Raccoon and Peanut the Squirrel on two stamps. He should just do some of these things. He should have learned that the go-along-to-get-along thing that he did last time Didn't get him anywhere. Fred Jones, and you should certainly know that now after taking a bullet in the ear. That's remarkable he survived that. And it's worth thinking about this. You know, the guy on the roof, the goofball on the roof, the only people who did anything to try and stop that guy were the local police from whatever the county department is called. Basically, the Secret Service just did nothing for minutes, 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 minutes. And so there's no point in playing nice with people who actually wanted your head blown off. I mean, it's not even like they slip something into your drink and you die in your sleep and no one's quite sure what happened. They wanted to blow his skull apart on live TV. And there's no reason on earth, and that's been memory-holed, and, you know, they've all got their, even the ones who've been sort of transferred sideways have all still got their pensions and everything. Fred Jones goes, "Hello, Mark, hope your health is stable and even improving with the results, the ongoing counts from yesterday's, the past month's elections. As the heads of Western capitals are exploding today, I thought a little bit of level setting among us constitution-waving conservatives here in America might be in order. Do you think Elon, Rand Paul, I don't know whether it's Rand, he's pals here with Ron Paul, these days. Vivek RFK Jr. et al. Will run into an insurmountable civil service wall in their vain efforts to reform, rein in the federal blob. I think Trump should on day one close all executive branch buildings in D.C. and rent out double wides in Bismarck and Des Moines and move the entire executive branch, other than the White House and executive office building, to Middle America. The Government Efficiency Task Force can offer bureaucrats a healthy early retirement severance package, or tell them to pack their bags and secure warmer clothing and move to the Dakotas, Iowa, Nebraska, Kansas, etc. Does the president have this authority? And if he doesn't, clearly the deep state is supra-constitutional. Well, on that last point, yes, it is. The Founding Fathers would have been horrified. They would have been revolted just by walking around Washington, D.C., as I was when I was there for, you know, whatever it was, a month for that stupid trial at the beginning of the year. It's a city that makes me sick. I mean, when you look at the disparity between the District of Columbia and its surrounding counties, and then the rest of America, whatever it is, 9 out of the 10 highest income counties are in the DC suburbs, because that's where power is. So they're all there. And it's not even like, you know, you can see the direct correlation and causation, because there's nothing but government in Washington. It's not like London or Paris or Rome, where you've got all the, you know, you got the finance and you got the stock market and you got all the theatres and concert halls and everything. So, you know, if you want to book a table in a London restaurant and you call up and say, "Oh, hello there, I wondered if you had a table for me and my mistress tonight. Actually, I'm the Lord Privy Seal." They won't care. They'll give you the table by the toilet, because in a London restaurant, it's all the showbiz types and the City of London Stock Exchange types are all the big players, and the Lord Privy Seal is a nobody. And in Washington, that's all there is. And it's disgusting, absolutely disgusting. And yeah, they should be. When you talk about which, the Department of Defense, the Pentagon should be raised and the ground salted. And the chiefs of staff should be moved to a strip mall on the edge of Cleveland. That's the sort of thing that's what needs to be done. What you need here is the equivalent of I've forgotten his name now. What was he called? Sir Roger, the New Zealand finance minister, who, what did they call it? Rogernomics, because Sir Roger privatized all these things in New Zealand. And that's actually quite a, I don't know whether it's possible in America, but that was quite a clever way of getting these guys off the government payroll. It's very hard to fire these people in America, but maybe you could actually privatize some of these things and move them to, where do you say, Des Moines and Bismarck? Yeah. There's no longer any attempt to prevent the growth of government. If you have Democrats in charge, the government just explodes. If you have Republicans in charge, I think there's, we talked about this in After America, it makes no difference. You look at since 1960 was the starting point I took in After America. Government grows under both parties. Glenn Roberts says, hi Mark, hope you're well. Today's news should be enough to perk up any sane person. I first became aware of you on GB News, so it wasn't all bad. I've since ditched the crapola channel after you were hung out to dry, but stuck with you. I became a member over a year ago, but this is my first Clubland Q&A question. Given Lammy, this is the British Foreign Secretary, David Lammy, and two-tier Keir, that's the Prime Minister, Starmer, historical comments regarding the next US president. At what point will Lammy become ex-Foreign Secretary, Farage be installed in a US ambassadorial role, and all the recent political prisoners be released? Yeah. Well, Starmer and Lammy went to meet with Trump in Trump Tower a few weeks ago, and they reported that the conversation had all gone very well. Because basically, David Lammy was saying about Trump, if you see those things on Twitter where there's some, you know, gender non-specific person with purple hair screaming about living in a fascist country. Guy Verhofstadt, the former Belgian prime minister, who's now head of some, you know, Euro boondoggle, has just been, Trump doesn't share our values and all that. So they're basically talking like left. They're all talking like Rachel Maddow. They're talking like left-wing activists. And Trump is, and you know, the thing about this is nobody needs to see a foreign minister. It's one thing if the head of state comes to visit, the president or the king, you can't say, oh, I'm not going to meet with him. Although actually, funnily enough, certain members of the royal family did when Hirohito, the Japanese emperor, came to visit in the 1970s, I remember. But you generally don't have any choice in if the guy's a head of state. You do about a foreign. Nobody needs to see a foreign minister. So if they've got, if Trump wants payback for the idiocy of David Lammy, who is an idiot, he was on some quiz. It was a sort of celebrity TV quiz or whatever. And they go, I can't remember what the question was, but it was something like this. It was like, which monarch preceded King George III? And he said, bzz, King George IV? Anyway, Trump is in a position to say, look, I'm not going to see this guy. He's not going to be dealing with anyone. He's not going to be dealing with the Secretary of State. If he flies into Washington, it'll be the Deputy Assistant Undersecretary of Paperclips who receives him. And that actually eventually will determine whether David Lammy stays in that post. And Trump is in a position, actually, to make very specific demands on that. There's no reason why he should waste his time with somebody who ought to be wearing purple hair and setting fire to a Wendy's in a George Floyd riot There's no reason why he should be putting up with that as an honored guest. It's just completely ridiculous. We got so many questions today. I'll just take one more. Greg Warren says, "Hi, ho, Mark. I hope that the result of the U.S. election has given the fillip to your health." You remind me of a promo I did for the BBC years ago, in which I took all these cliches, like I said, "Oh, that would provide an enormous fillip," and then a guy called Enormous Philip walked on. I must have that lying around somewhere. I should try and find it. "Has given an enormous fillip to your health, as it has to mine," says Greg Warren, "and with luck to the once and to come president. After the bollocks that he has had to endure for the past 4 years, it is truly satisfying to be able to watch a gaggle of media types having to sit down to a hearty helping of crow in bitter sauce. Here in Oz, the media lovies are doing to camera pieces with expressions on their faces like they've just experienced a wet fart." Oh, are they doing the tilty-headed wanker pose? Oh, that's lovely. "And they keep referring to President Trump as a convicted felon, which just makes me giggle. That so was Gandhi. Yes, indeed. So was Nelson Mandela. I feel a verse of YMCA coming on." That's not going to get... Look, here's what we learned. This was a very important election. I can't stand... I could never... For as long as I've been in America, I remember the first time I saw Dan Rather, and I was thinking, this guy isn't any good. He can't read prompter. He can't read it except in that stilted way. These people are just awful. You know, here, one of the hardest working reporters in the business, Bob Schieffer, has been working his sources. And then Bob Schieffer comes on and reads out a press release from the Department of Bollocks. I mean, it's all rubbish. But at least they had an audience. You know, what we learned this last election is that Joe Rogan is way better. Is Joe Rogan is bigger than Nora O'Donnell and Margaret Brennan, who did the CBS debate. And Margaret Brennan was like in tears this morning. She was like the one who broke the news that Trump had won on CBS at 4 a.m. or whatever it was. There's no point. That should be the first thing, that nobody agrees to an interview on CBS. They're not going to do for you what they did for Kamala. Oh, her answer here is crap, so we're going to find a better answer and edit that into this question. It doesn't matter. Joe Rogan is bigger than Nora O'Donnell. Elon Musk is bigger than Rupert Murdoch. Things have changed. And even the brain-dead Republican establishment should be able to recognize that things have changed. And that's the thing, you know, this isn't a time for messing around. He's liberal. You know, people say, oh, it's the second term presidents, they're lame ducks. No, he's not. He's liberated to do all the things he should have done in the first term, as long as he has people around him. As I said, original thinkers, otherwise the debt and Chinese hegemony will prove dispositive. This has been Mark Steyn's Clubland Q&A. That's going to do it for today. I'm a little tuckered out now. But do stick with Steyn Online for our regular Thursday date with Laura's Links. Laura Rosen-Cohen will round up the internet as only she can. If you're still toying with the pros and cons of joining the Mark Steyn Club, come on in. The water's fine. And don't forget, for the Steyn shy chum in your life, there's a Mark Steyn Club gift membership with his or her name on it. Stay safe, stay free, stay well.
Mark Steyn's Clubland Q&A is a production of Mark Steyn Enterprises and Oak Hill Media. All rights reserved.